Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Marlon Brando, Trevor Howard, Richard Harris in an Aaron Rosenberg production. Mutiny on the Bounty. Co-starring Hugh Griffith, Richard Hayden, and Tarita. Music by Bronislaw Caper. Orchestra conducted by Robert Armbruster. Screenplay by Charles Lederer, based on the novel by Charles Nordhoff and James Norman Hall. Directed by Lewis Milestone. Portsmouth Harbour, England, December 23rd, 1787. A number of ships lie at anchor offshore under a blue sky, while goods are carried on board another ship in the bustling harbour.
Portsmouth, December 1787. I looked upon the vessel that was to take me to the island of Tahiti, a destination so far from England that one couldn't go farther without starting to come home. And the length of the journey was equaled by the importance of its mission. What could be more vital than to find and cultivate a nourishing new food that cost nothing to grow? A blessing for the poor, the hungry of the world. It was a mission close to my heart. And it was I who had been chosen from amongst all the gardeners in England.
Oh, beg pardon, can you tell me if this boat is the Bounty?
Boat, did you say?
Yes.
A boat! It's a ship, your landlord.
What kind of a seaman's this?
He's a peddler. You selling something, chum?
I'm not a peddler. I'm a gardener. Assistant botanist at the Royal Botanical Gardens at Kew. You know Kew Gardens, of course.
Kew's outside London. You lost your way, mate.
Well, I haven't lost my way if this boat, I beg your pardon, if the ship is the Bounty.
Aye, it's the Bounty, all right.
And perhaps one of you gentlemen could tell me where I sign on?
I wonder what a gardener's doing on board, huh?
Ain't gonna plant roses in me hammock, are you?
Good thing, too, the way you smell.
Hold on, hold on, look. Empty pots.
I know, we're going to Tahiti to fill them with something, right? Well, one usually fills empty pots with something.
What do you got here?
Little telescope? Oh, be careful, please. These are scientific documents. Agronomy records.
Cool, they're what?
Agronomy records. They're sketches, really.
Sketches?
Sketches of breadfruit.
Breadfruit?
Breadfruit?
You mean where we're grown, bread grows on trees?
Bread trees? Well, that's daft enough for a shipload, eh?
There's nothing daft about breadfruit. This is a very real food, a staple like wheat. Here.
Goofy-looking weed.
It's funny that nobody's ever heard of this before, then.
No one ever heard of the potato until Sir Francis Drake brought it from South America. It altered European economy. Breadfruit may alter it again.
I wonder what it tastes like.
The West Indies Company plans to feed it to the slaves in Jamaica, no matter what it tastes like. But then, if it becomes popular, they'll feed it to the world. Gentlemen, we're about to embark on a very momentous journey. Personally, I'm proud to be part of it. Now, where do I sign on?
I'll show you. Come along with me.
Breadfruit. Did you ever hear of that?
Now, come on, love. You got me money. What more do you want? Now, come on, love. Get off the ship.
Hey, Stress. Sign on me meat here, will you?
Make your mark right there.
As Mr. Brown signs in a large book, two uniformed men in navy blue tunics patrol the crowded deck.
Captain, come in aboard!
Everyone stands still.
He was master of the Resolution under Captain Cook.
What's he like?
A hard one. I sailed under him.
Well, he walks like a sailor anyway.
The captain lifts his hat as he strides on board.
Mr. Fryer?
Captain, sir?
The captain looks around at the assembled men.
How's the crew shaping?
A prime lot, I'd say, sir. And all volunteers.
Good. I'd like my chest brought aboard, Mr. Fryer. If you have a sober hand who can be trusted not to desert.
At your service, sir.
Mills is a good man, sir.
Remain by my cabin. I'll have other errands.
Aye, aye, sir. Come on, give me a hand, mate.
You're not backward in pushing yourself forward, are you?
You keep your pork nose where it belongs and give me a hand with the captain's gear.
Don't be touchy, mate. You've got a long voyage ahead, you know.
That's true. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Always speak up for the easy tasks in port to be spared the difficult ones at sea.
A horse-drawn carriage rushes through the wide street. Mr. Fryer and Captain Bligh watch it approach.
What's this, a royal visit?
That's Mr. Christian's carriage, sir.
Is it now?
A man gets out.
So I've had a career fop palmed onto me as a first mate.
You haven't met him yet, sir?
He was assigned only yesterday. Moorchild was my choice. He was taken ill with some malady or other.
Two well-dressed women board, followed by the flamboyant figure of Mr. Christian in a red cloak and grey top hat.
Nothing compares with a woman washed all over smelling like a Frenchman.
As the crew watch, Mr. Christian takes his leave of his female companions, then approaches the captain.
Fletcher Christian, Lieutenant, come aboard to join, sir.
Lieutenant Christian? You are a naval lieutenant, I presume?
Yes. Please forgive my appearance, sir. I was staying with friends in the country when my orders reached me, so I came directly.
I see. This is Mr. Fryer, our sailing master.
Oh, yes. Nice to see you again, Mr. Fryer.
Same to you, Mr. Christian.
Yes, we sailed together.
Let me show your men your cabin. Your pardon, sir.
You've come none too soon. Please be about your duties without delay.
Your indulgence, sir. I have two charming friends here who insist upon seeing me to my ship. And they also insist upon meeting the captain. They say it's important.
Very well.
Thank you.
Mr. Christian replaces his grey top hat.
Hello, Ned.
Fletcher.
How are you?
I'd heard you were going to be with us.
Yes, we'll be together.
What luck? Well, if you'll excuse me.
Certainly. We'll dine together. Wonderful lad. Mother's great friend of the family, Lady Young. Wonderful horsewoman also. Trains them herself, if you can imagine.
I'll try.
Je voudrais bien vous présenter, Monsieur Bligh, le Comtesse de Brissac.
Enchanté de faire votre connaissance, Commandant.
I'm sorry, madam. I do not speak French.
Oh, for shame, Captain. That's uncivilized of you.
I humbly apologize.
May I present Captain Bligh? Lady Gwendolyn Arbus.
Delighted to meet you, Captain. May I compliment you upon your distinguished record of command?
The compliment's slightly premature, milady. This is my first captaincy.
The first of many, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Good luck, Captain. Come along, Therese.
Excuse me, sir.
No, don't bother to come with us, Fletcher. Last-minute attentions are always hollow, and you are insincere to start
with. Oh, dear.
The two ladies descend the boarding ramp as Mr. Christian beams.
Well, sir, I understand we're taking this river scow halfway round the world on a grocer's errand.
I take a somewhat different view. So do their lordships of the Admiralty.
Do they really? How extraordinary.
Tell me, what is a man of your particular interests doing in the Navy?
Oh, process of elimination. There's something dusty about the army, and affairs of state are rather a bore. You know, one must do something. Here's a fellow trying to catch your eye, sir. Looks like an embalmer.
Beg pardon, sir. Might I have a word?
Are you our gardener from Kew?
Yes, sir. Brown, sir.
Good. Found your quarters yet?
No, sir.
Get him a good billet. This is the most important man aboard.
Aye, aye, sir.
Well, I'm hardly that, but thank you, sir. I have a message for you, sir, from our chief botanist.
Well, what is it?
He has reached the conclusion that the breadfruit has a dormant period, sir. According to his experiments, it begins sometime in October.
A dormant period?
4 or 5 months when the fruit cannot be transplanted. The cuttings die.
Well, October's some way off. That shouldn't worry us, unless your botanist
is wrong about the date.
Exactly, sir.
Mr. Christian.
Yes, sir. Oh, sir, does it really matter when these vegetables arrive in Jamaica?
It matters to the tune of £1,000 a day, Mr. Christian.
My word, that is an impressive amount, yes.
The West India merchants are impressed by it. So is the Admiralty, and so am I. It is my intention to land our cargo in Jamaica, as far ahead of the Admiralty's timetable as is humanly possible.
Yes. Well, one can understand that. Doing so, one can look forward to promotions and even honours and all that, yes.
I will do exactly all that, Mr. Christian. Which brings me to the subject of yourself. I will tolerate nothing less than a man's best efforts, officer or seaman. Highborn connections are no substitute for hard work.
No, indeed they're not, sir. But personally, I see no reason why a good officer cannot be a gentleman as well. Do you disagree, sir?
Not if he's first a good officer.
It's a debatable point, but a good subject for a dinner's conversation. But I'm keeping Mr. Brown waiting. I mustn't neglect the most important men in our ship. Excuse me, sir. Hello, Brown.
Later, Mr. Christian has changed into his navy blue and cream uniform.
Make ready for sail, Mr. Christian.
Aye, aye, sir. Hands to stations for leaving harbour.
Aye, aye, sir. All hands to stations for leaving harbour.
All hands to stations.
Crew members begin climbing the rigging. Captain Bligh stands with his chest thrust out, watching proceedings closely. Men haul on ropes, while others stand on rigging that runs the length of a long boom, part of the way up a mast. Simultaneously, sails unfurl from three parallel booms on the mast, followed by another three. The crew start lowering themselves down the rigging. Some allow rope to slide between their feet as they pass it from hand to hand. Others clamber down rope ladders.
You're ready for sea, sir.
Set topsails and headsails. Starboard tack.
Set topsails and headsails.
Ropes tug at the lower corners of a large square sail. As it sets, it billows and fills with the wind.
Set gallant. Feet home.
Other whitish-grey sails fill out in the breeze and flutter gently as the ship moves.
Set royal!
The final sail is set.
Midships, steady as she goes.
McCoy hauls on the large wooden wheel, pulling on the handles on its edge. With all sails set and taut, the Bounty surges forward under a bright blue sky and white clouds. She ploughs majestically through the blue sea, with a large red ensign fluttering from aft rigging. The Bounty makes her way steadily into open sea, trailing white wake behind her.
Bosun's mate.
Aye, sir.
Pipe up spirits.
Up spirits! Watch below! Muster for grog on the upper deck!
Men emerge on deck with tankards.
Hey, Mills! Mr. Christian wants a word with you on the quarterdeck. Fact is, I'm a little slow sometimes and...
Good afternoon, sir. Mac here is reporting a theft.
What, already?
Aye, sir.
Carry on with your investigations.
Mills steps up to Mr. Christian.
Seaman Mills at your service, sir. No labour too long, no job too hard, sir.
Well, you're a light-hearted fellow as well as a light-fingered one.
Sir?
Seems that in a moment of exuberance, you stole two 25-pound cheeses.
I stole two 25-pound cheeses, sir.
But you wish to deny it. Well, speak up, Mills.
Oh, yes, I do, sir. Of course. Certainly, sir. First of all, sir, I'd be grateful to know who's accusing me.
Yes, of course, sir. This observant chap here says he saw you take them before we left Portsmouth.
Well, he saw wrong, sir. Or else he's a bloody liar.
Are you a bloody liar? Answer freely.
No, sir. I saw him take them two cheeses with my own eyes.
Mr. Christian,
testing one man's word against another's is an empty procedure. List the shortage as unsolved theft and stop the men's cheese ration until the deficit is made up.
As you say, sir. Well, that'll be all, Mills.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Christian looks at the other man.
Was there something further you wish to discuss? Early Renaissance sketching, perhaps?
No, sir. Sorry, sir.
The man walks away and glances back briefly before heading through a hatch below deck. Mills looks troubled. McCoy.
Let it lay, whatever it is. Let it lay.
I got a little score to settle.
Look, son, this is a small ship. Fill it with grudges and there'll be no room left to live in. And you're listening to 30 years at sea.
You don't preach to me, McCoy, and I won't preach to you, all right?
It's a good bargain. With you, the loser.
Mills grins, then heads below deck. McCoy, a powerfully built man with a thick grey beard smoking a pipe, heads down other steps.
You can thank your good friend Mills for this. Now this is the way it's going to be. Captain's orders. There'll be no cheese issue until the shortage is made up. You understand? And you.
So we've got a boat licker on board, eh? Troublemaker.
Was it my fault?
Hey, what's the matter?
You don't like to be called a thief, that's all. Please. That's right.
I'll teach you a lesson.
Hey, squealing hey. On the...
Hang!
I like a bit of cheese with my grog.
Maybe it's you who should take the licking.
Oh, yeah. It was the captain asked me to take the cheeses to his home as a favor. It's always the same in this blasted navy. You do a job for an officer like that, you're called a thief. And the crew lose their cheeses.
So you did the captain a favor, eh?
It was the captain. The captain helping himself to the ship's stores. Hey. The captain's the thief, not me.
Mills turns to see Captain Bligh and Mr. Christian approaching.
The Articles of War provide most adequately for a man who calls his captain a thief.
I think a few weeks without grog will teach him to hold his tongue.
A two dozen with the lash will teach him better still. All hands to witness punishment, Mr. Christian, if you please.
Mills looks worried. Mr. Christian turns away from the men and shakes his head quickly as he leaves. Mills turns slowly. The others watch him as he sits with a look of dread on his face. A seaman hands the reluctant Mills a gleaming tankard. Mills raises it slowly to his lips, but cannot face its contents. Quintle opens a small wooden case. He takes out a small bundle in a red drawstring bag and exchanges a look with Mills. Later, on deck.
If any officer, mariner, or soldier in or belonging to the fleet shall behave himself with contempt to his superior officer, such superior officer being in the execution of his office, he shall be punished according to the nature of his offense. Two dozen lashes.
Ship's company. On hats.
The officers and crew put on their hats as Quintle binds Mills' wrists to a wooden grate.
Well, just remember, it ain't me that's whipping you. Don't worry, I'll live. You know, mate, it ain't me, remember? Stop worrying. You're making me nervous.
With a grim expression, Quintle pulls open the bag and takes out a whip made with numerous leather strips, a cat o' nine tails.
Lay on, Quintle. One. Two. Three. Four. 5. 6.
You're going too lightly, Quintal. Lay on with a will or you'll take his place.
7. 8. 9. 10. 11. 12.
You were ordered to witness punishment. You can't run away.
13. 14. 15. 16. 17. 18. 19. 20. 21. 22. 23. 24.
Company! Dismiss!
As the crew disperse, Mills' accuser hurries away. That evening, the Bounty is silhouetted against the evening horizon. At the officers' dining table, Mr. Christian is frowning pensively. He puts a forkful of food into his mouth and chews thoughtfully. Captain Bly eats looking at ease, and Mr. Fryer eats slowly, but a younger officer seems to have no appetite at all.
You are not eating, Mr. Young.
With your permission, I'm not hungry, sir.
Permission denied. We'll not have food wasted. Eat your supper.
Aye, sir.
Not a very sociable group tonight.
As a matter of fact, sir, I was about to make a remark when you spoke.
Your pardon. Something troubling you, Mr. Christian?
No, sir. It's nothing. I just, I don't feel my cheeriest after watching a man take a severe lashing.
Pass Mr. Young the potatoes, please. You've witnessed punishment before, surely? Go ahead. Speak your mind.
Well, sir, since you ask, it's the question of degree that troubles me. You see, if one flogs a man half to death for a minor infraction, then how does one punish him for a serious offence?
Minor infraction, you said?
Yes, I think that two cheeses, sir.
Thus the word thief applied to his captain. But you still feel, though, that stopping the man's grog was sufficient punishment. Well, I agree with you.
You agree?
Eat it up. Excellent stew. If we were concerned with only the one case, certainly.
Well, I don't
well, follow. Well, hear me. You will all of you, no doubt, command your own ship someday. Let us suppose that your vessel is running in heavy seas. The shrouds are covered with ice. A gale is blowing. It becomes necessary, in your opinion, to order a seaman aloft. He realizes, of course, that if his fingers slip from the icy shrouds for a split second, he'll perish immediately. Now, this is a typical seaman. A half-witted, wife-beating, habitual drunkard. His whole life is spent evading and defying authority. Tell me, sir, what is it that makes this man go aloft?
I think, depending on the man, sir, any number of things.
You can put it in one word. Fear. Fear of what you'll do to him. Fear of punishment so vivid in his mind that he fears it even more than sudden death. Now, don't mistake me. I'm not advising cruelty or brutality with no purpose. My point is that cruelty with purpose is not cruelty. It's efficiency. But a man will never disobey you. Once he's watched his mate's backbone laid bare, he'll remember those white ribs staring at him. He'll see the flesh jump and hear the whistle of the whip for the rest of his life.
Mr. Young has been looking queasy. Mr. Christian and Mr. Fryer each look up from the table as he leaves. Captain Bly cuts himself a slice of cheese.
Well, perhaps you're right, sir. I'd be careful of that cheese if I were you, sir. It has a peculiar smell. I think it's a bit tainted. Then, of course, it's a question of individual taste. It's a damn good port, huh?
In the following weeks, Captain Bligh worked the ship for every furlong of gain it could give, every inch of canvas spread, and God help the helmsman if the wake were not arrow straight. Captain Bligh must have asked me the same question a score of times. What day saw the beginning of the breadfruit's dormant period? I told him repeatedly. I could not name the exact date for lack of knowing it. It became clear he'd begun to worry lest we arrive too late. He studied his charts hour on hour. I could not imagine why. I'd been told there was only one way to get to the other side of the world. The long way, around the Cape of Good Hope at the bottom of Africa. That was the course with favoring winds. As for the other route, the westward passage around the Horn, while arithmetic said yes to that, weather said no.
Night is drawing on once more. The Bounty sails through the fading light as a black silhouette against the streaks of sunset showing through the clouds on the horizon. Bright light shows through the windows of the aft cabin. Captain Bligh strides along the deck, first steadying himself against the rigging, then with his hands clasped behind his back. He passes McCoy at the helm, then Mr. Christian and Mr. Young. They watch the captain as he strides slowly, placing each foot wide apart, toes pointing outwards. Hearing their laughter, Captain Bligh turns with a pleasant smile on his face. He beams and strides back to the two officers.
May I share your merriment?
Just a pleasantry, sir, was nothing.
Mayn't I be included?
Well, it was just the way you were walking, sir. Reminded me of a mutual friend, Lord Folkestone.
Do continue.
Well, that's all, sir.
What is the resemblance?
Well, you just both have this distinctive walk, sir.
Really? In what way distinctive?
Well, he was kicked by a horse, sir. I'd rather not say where, sir, but it had the effect of making him walk most oddly. Poor fellow.
I see. You may make yourself comfortable at the masthead, Mr. Young. Please remain there until I summon you.
Aye, sir.
Don't repeat that mistake, Mr. Christian. I'm not a figure of fun.
Indeed you're not, sir.
Make the course south-southwest, please.
Aye, aye, sir. Bosun's mate! Did you say south-southwest, sir?
I did.
Lee braces!
Lee braces it is, sir!
Downhill.
Downhelm, sir.
Hold it steady, south-southwest.
South-southwest, sir.
Check away those weather sheets.
Aye, aye, sir.
Going round the Horn will take 5 months off our journey.
Well, we shall have ourselves quite a little adventure.
What amuses you now?
I was just thinking, sir, that our little errand for groceries might wind up in a page of naval history. If we succeed in negotiating the Horn in the dead of winter.
Why shouldn't we succeed? Admiral Anderson did.
Yes, but of course he didn't choose to attempt it in a 91-foot chamber pot. In any event, his was the only ship to do it, and I believe he lost 50% of his crew.
You might point that out to the crew. It should improve their performance. Remember, fear is our best weapon. Good night, sir.
When should I recall Mr. Young, sir?
When I come on deck in the morning. I want to see how comically he walks, poor fellow.
But perhaps in the morning, sir, he won't be able to walk at all.
Perhaps.
The captain goes.
Good night, sir.
Mr. Christian looks thoughtful, then glances up at Mr. Young climbing the rigging on a mast.
Good fellow.
Mr. Christian waves and Mr. Young waves back. Mr. Christian draws his dark cape around him and passes McCoy at the helm.
Begging your pardon, sir, are we really making for the Horn?
Yes, evidently.
May heaven protect us. I was in Admiral Anson's ship, sir.
Were you really? Do you find it interesting?
Interesting, sir. It was like riding a cork over a waterfall, sir. And wind is not the name for what blows in your face. It's something made of iron. Swings at you from the west, never changing, day in and day out. With seas as high as the mainmast. We had lifelines rigged everywhere, sir, and there were still 16 men washed overboard. Cold. 3 men froze in the yards. Frozen stiff, sir. Couldn't get them down without cutting their fingers loose from the shrouds. I was lucky.
He's missing one finger.
But that's the horn for you, sir. A delightful passage.
A barely conscious Mr. Young is lowered down from the masthead. When he reaches the deck, the crew begin unfastening the rope. Mr. Christian watches with a solemn frown.
Good morning, sir. And good morning to you, Ned. Did you sleep well?
I can't move them at all. There's no feeling of pleasure. None at all, don't you understand? Absolutely.
Come along.
I don't think I can walk very well, Fletcher.
Well, don't be self-conscious. We should probably all walk like Lord Folkestone before this voyage is over. There you are. Very good, Ned. Very good.
Now the Bounty charges through waves, churning up surf and sending spray washing onto the deck. As Mr. Christian squints up at the mast, the Bounty lurches and crashes through more stormy, foaming waves.
Left side in there, come on! Jump to it!
Rigging! Rigging! Rigging!
Come on, let's get on with it! We don't want to be here if this stick breaks!
As men finish furling a sail along a boom, Captain Bligh steps out onto the soaking wet deck. He strides past the crew with his hands behind his back.
I think that's better, sir.
I am free, Mr. Morrison.
Afraid of a little weather, Mr. Christian? Set the topgallants again.
But you see, sir, the masts are straining, sir.
You arguing with me?
By no means, sir. I was simply answering your question. Morrison, set to the gallants again.
Aye, sir. All right, you men, up aloft and set to the gallants again.
Any excuse to retard our progress, eh, Mr. Christian?
But you wrong me, sir, if you believe that I would willfully obstruct our progress.
Come now, why don't you admit you wouldn't lift a finger to speed it?
But that's absurd, sir. Why should I not wish to do my best?
Because you are the sort of self-styled gentleman who thinks only one thought. You feel only one emotion, contempt. Contempt for effort, for ambition, for anyone born less fortunate than yourself. You are poisoned with contempt, Mr. Christian, and it makes you useless to me.
But I assure you, sir, that the execution of my duties is entirely unaffected by my private opinion of you.
Be certain of that, Mr. Christian. Be most entirely certain.
End hold! End hold!
Land shows in the darkness beyond the stormy sea.
Prepare the ship for heavy weather, if you please.
Aye, aye, sir. Bosun! Prepare the ship for heavy weather!
Aye, aye, sir!
Standing behind the captain, Mr. Christian grins.
Ahoy below! Breakers dead ahead!
They ain't no breakers, they're combers!
Stares out at the raging sea.
Two oceans meeting head on!
The Bounty plowed through the surging white waves that crash continually over the deck. figure steps out onto the deck.
Lend a hand, Norman.
Captain's orders to wear a ship, Mr. Christian.
You, sir?
Aye, aye, sir.
The crew are resting down below. The ship's bow smashes through another huge wave. A barrel in the hold has come loose and slides from one side to the other. The floor is awash with seawater. As men head down through a hatch, the barrel careers through the ship, still upright, knocking other things over. Mr. Christian and others manage to hem the barrel in a corner, but it's too heavy to keep there and slides away from them again. The barrel heads towards a man, but stops short of crushing him. Mr. Christian to Mills. Mr. Christian grabs a coiled rope. The colossal sea is buffeting the ship, threatening to swamp her completely.
Mr. Fryer, sir!
What is it, Mills?
Mr. Christian said let her run before the wind!
Before the wind?
We can't lash the barrels until she steadies!
All right, go below!
Right to us!
Midships to hell!
Midships to hell!
Surf and mighty waves thunder past the ship. Below deck, Quintal watches the barrel smashing through wooden steps. The loose barrel smashes into another one, causing it to leak clear liquid.
Quintal, stand away! Now hold off till she steadies!
As the Bounty turns, she settles down. Captain Bligh is sleeping in a chair in his cabin. Mr. Christian to the men in the hold.
All right, she's steady. Norman, Quintal, get a lash on that cask.
Pass me a line.
The relative calm disturbs Bligh, who opens his eyes and sits up suddenly. Now with the waves moving in the same direction and no longer crashing against them, the Bounty moves more steadily with the few sails that are set full. Captain Bligh clambers out of the hatch. Turns again, and once more the waves begin smashing into the ship. A stack of barrels have been strung together with rope in the hold, but one falls, crushing Norman beneath it. Mr. Christian stares at Norman. He tries to lift the barrel with two others, but it won't budge. Norman looks up at them with blood seeping from his mouth.
Secure those barrels!
Mr. Christian swings an axe, which breaks the barrel. Its liquid contents gush out, and once it's empty, it's lifted away.
Easy now, easy. Careful.
Mr. Christian and the others slowly begin moving Norman.
Gently now.
Norman is carried up out of the hold as wash spatters down heavily through an open hatch. The men lie Norman on a bunk.
I'll get the medicine chest.
Mills checks for signs of life. Quintal holds a small knife blade to Norman's lips and checks for condensation to show he's breathing.
He's dead.
Mr. Christian!
Are you deaf as well as irresponsible? I demand an explanation.
I thought she was holding steadily enough, sir. I ordered Norman under a water cart.
Never mind, Norman. Answer me.
Never mind, Norman, sir.
There was no justification in your ordering the ship hove to. We lost a full league before I could countermand your order. One full league.
You countermanded my orders, sir.
Now you heed me well, Mr. Christian. We are embarked upon a king's mission. Any further attempt at sabotage, and I will deal with you as a traitor.
When you countermanded that order, sir, you crushed the life out of Thomas Norman.
I suppose you would halt the ship again for his burial service.
Since we are not at war, sir, I would hope to give him a decent burial, yes, sir.
I am at war. Against ill winds, contrary currents, and incompetent officers. You'd best join my war, Mr. Christian. For if I don't start winning soon, the casualty list will be real enough.
As Captain Bligh heads off, Mr. Christian stares after him intently while others gather around Norman. As the Bounty surges through the dark, stormy sea, men clamber down the rigging and spray washes over the deck. Now a man climbs the rigging that's covered in a layer of snow. McCoy adjusts his grip on a handle on the snow-covered wheel. He stares ahead steadfastly, encrusted with snow and ice. In his cabin, Captain Bligh studies a chart holding a pair of dividers.
I make our position here by dead reckoning.
If that's right, sir, another 3 weeks should see us through.
We'll get through. Pumps holding their own?
Aye, sir.
Good. We'll go on the other tack now. Tack ship, if you please.
Aye, sir.
All hands on deck! Tack ship!
Come on, Williams, up top!
Get up, the horn waits for no man.
He'll drown the lot of us. I know the way that man's mind works. I felt it on my back.
Now stop your grousing. Portsmouth or Cape Horn is all one to a seaman.
The Bounty charges through the waves, throwing spray up on either side of the bow.
Well, it can't stay overcast forever, sir.
4 weeks blind tacking is forever, Mr. Fryer, and you know it.
Captain Bligh strides away, then stops and comes back.
An attack! Where ship?
Downwind of this weather, sir, is very dangerous.
We have no choice!
Weather braces!
Aye, aye, sir! Starboard watch on deck! Starboard watch on deck! All hands on deck!
The men look weary, and some have cut hands. Williams is helped up onto his feet.
What's the matter?
Spray thunders over the Bounty, and a cage containing a pig is swept away by gushing water. Buffeted and rocked by the stormy sea, foaming water gushes over the deck. A man grabs a rope just in time to avoid being swept away by another heavy surge. Another colossal jet of spray blasts the ship from the rear. Water thunders down onto the men on deck and explodes through windows into a cabin. Mr. Christian looks out of a door with concern at the water sloshing around table legs and raining down steps from a hatchway. More torrential blasts of foaming water tear across the ship.
Steer 2 points to harbour!
Be ready to reverse your helm!
Lay away lee braces! All away! All away weather braces!
We're back where we started 4 weeks ago!
Weather braces! As another barrage of water thunders in through the small windows, Mr. Christian leaps clear.
Bad news, sir. Your cabin's completely awash.
Mr. Christian grins with perverse delight as Captain Bligh steadies himself on the huge capstan, then steps over to Mr. Fryer.
Pumps are barely able to hold their own, sir.
We've lost, Mr. Fryer. Make way for the Cape of Good Hope.
Aye, aye, sir.
Leaning over at an alarming angle, the Bounty ploughs through the tempestuous grey ocean. Finally in daylight, the Bounty sails on a calm and flat ocean under a cloudy sky. A handful of men sit in a cradle slung over the port side near the water's edge, repairing the hull. Another man is climbing down a rope to join them. The Bounty now has more of her sails set. It's now evening, and a meal is being served.
Here. What's all this, then?
That, old son, is half a ration of meat.
What do you mean, half a ration?
Captain's orders.
Orders? You dish up a full plate of that, or I'll cut your curls off.
I don't make the rules, I just dish the stuff.
That's all you're gonna get. You better take it.
He's right. Half rations are better than none at all.
Why half rations? What for?
Make up time, I suppose.
Well, starving the men don't make the ship go no faster.
Seems stopping for stores, doesn't it?
So to catch up a couple of weeks, we starve all the way to Tahiti, eh?
I'll tell you one thing. It's against the regulations.
Regulations?
If we can be flogged by the regulations, we can be fed by them.
Good. You convinced me. Now go and convince the captain.
Yeah. All right. Anybody come along with me?
She's the captain?
That's right, the captain.
You sure it's the regulations? How do you know?
Because I read him.
Huh. A sailor with an education. Like a singing pig. All right, I'm with you.
What are you men doing in these quarters?
I brought them, sir. They wish to state a complaint.
Let them do so. Speak up.
I'm begging your pardon, sir. We're sorry to disturb you, sir. If this isn't a good moment, sir, why, this is nothing that won't keep a while, sir.
No, no, please continue. I'm always available to hear complaints.
Well, Captain, sir, we've come representing the whole crew. It's about the half ration, sir. And they ain't right, sir. The crew would like to remind you, sir, what it says in the regulations.
You dare to quote the regulations to me?
The regulations was made to go by, sir.
We don't mean no impertinence, sir.
But right is right, sir.
5 full months you've cost me, you fumbling idlers.
Us? How, sir? What did we do?
This commission gave every man in the ship's company the key to opportunity. The chance to show what he's made of. Well, you've showed what you're made of. Dirt and empty silk nightcaps.
Oh. Well, I thought I heard your voice, sir. Good night.
So you want full rations, do you? Well, I'll give you all the rations you need to get us to Tahiti in time. Now get out.
Another day, on deck.
All the rations you need to get us to Tahiti on time. Those were Captain Bligh's words. Rations of what, he didn't say. But he soon showed us. Rations of his favorite commodity, punishment. Served up to the tune of his favorite music. A cry of pain, a scream of agony. That was the concert that played us across three oceans as the months vanished from the calendar. Captain Bligh's tension increased.
Now, under a sunny blue sky, the sea is flat calm. The Bounty is being pulled by crew members in a rowing boat, attached to the ship by a long rope. Now, another crew member has been bound at the wrists to the wooden grate. Quintal lashes the man's bare back.
Free!
Now the Bounty has picked up wind, its bow cuts swiftly through the white surf.
Come down on deck, you clumsy lovers! And that jib, hoist it taut!
A bare-chested man climbs up the rigging with the blue sky behind him.
And ho!
Men look